The following broadcast of Sioux Valley Voice was recorded earlier. You will not be able to call in during the next hour. The next live broadcast of Sioux Valley Voice will be on Wednesday, March 4th at 10 a.m., and our topic will be the new book, Iditarod, The First 10 Years. You're listening to KTNA 88.9 FM, community radio for the Upper Susitna Valley. This week on Sioux Valley Voice, our topic is the Denali Nordic Ski Club. My guests in studio are Arthur Mannix and Bill Barstow, and we are joined on the line by Adam Verrier, the godfather of the USIT Classic Ski Race, as it's been described to me. They'll be with us for the next hour. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can give us a call 733-1200 or send an email to dj@ktna.org. Arthur, Bill, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah. And then let's see if we can get Adam on the line, see how well our technology is working. Adam, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Oh, hey, first try. Look at that.
Great.
So I guess just to get us started, guys, if you can kind of describe what exactly is the Denali Nordic Ski Club? Bill, if you want to take that one?
Well, it's a group of mostly people that live here in Talkeetna that are interested in skiing and interested in exposing other people to skiing and are also interested in the local trails. And
yeah, it's been structured. We're a 501c3 nonprofit. And as Bill was saying, you know, trails have been a focus. It's turned out, you know, maintaining existing trails and the establishment of new trails. You know, Talkeetna, back in the 70s when I first showed up, it was like a hub of with a spoke of lots of trails, winter trails that were coming into Talkeetna. And over the intervening decades, between road development and all the berms, a lot of the traditional access points and access trails have been wiped out. And actually, it's kind of by default, the ski club has found itself in a position to be one of the organizations that's really working to maintain the viability of traditional and existing, you know, trails. And so that's been something. But as Bill had mentioned earlier, too, education is a big part of the ski club's mandate, getting kids out skiing, getting older folks out skiing. And it's the type of sport that you can take up at any age. And it's just a great way to experience this area.
Okay. And, of course, obviously, by far the best-known event that you guys put on is the USIT Classic Ski Race, which is coming up here in just about a month, right?
Yeah, I think it's going to be March 21st this year.
So almost exactly a month from now.
Yeah, and it's kind of karmic when it falls on the spring equinox.
Right.
So March 21st, spring equinox, so that's kind of cool.
Right. And then, Adam, this is where we're going to turn to you because, as I understand it, you're the one who got the USIC started, but not in Talkeetna. So can you tell us a little bit about the origins of the USIC Classic Ski Race?
Yeah, sure. I was. It started back in 2000. I was it came to us. It was when I was skiing up around the Willow area with my friend Deb Essex, and we were driving home from a really great ski out in the woods, and I was thinking about races that I had been in, mostly in Norway and Sweden, called Touran races, where unlike most of our races in the United States, where you go around sort of a prescribed 5-kilometer, 10-kilometer loop, these races would go out into the woods, and they'd be whatever distance the loop was, and it's usually a one-loop race, and it might be 37 kilometers or 48 or 19 kilometers or whatever it was. I felt like we were really lacking a race like this. I was racing most every week, same sorts of courses at Kincaid or Birch Hill, which were fine, but they weren't all that creative. You'd go around the Leakage three times, something like that, like a 10-kilometer course. And I was sort of complaining that these races were all the same and we needed something different. And so that's kind of where the USIC started. And we first went up to Sheep Mountain Lodge. We were up there the next weekend talking with Zach Steer, kind of looking for a place to run this race, because over the next week I decided this has got to happen and I got to do this. I was complaining about some things to my friend Deb, and her response, as it usually is, why don't you stop complaining and just do something about it? So we started this race, and the first year was up at Sheep Mountain Lodge.
Okay. And then after 5 years, it came to Talkeetna. How did that come about?
That came about because the race had been 1 year at Sheep Mountain Lodge, and then it was 4 years, I believe, at Majestic Valley Lodge. But Majestic at that time was thinking about maybe selling their lodge, and they were kind of booked in the spring for the following year. And when I spoke with them after year number four or year number five or whatever, they said that they weren't sure if they'd be. And so that next summer, I didn't really know what was going to happen with the USIC, and I figured it would have to go someplace, but I wasn't really sure where. And during the summer, it must have been somewhere around midsummer, when I think Taslina Manick was speaking for the APUC team, I was speaking with Arthur out in the field below APU, and he was telling me that Talkeetna was thinking about maybe trying to put together a ski race and was looking for any advice from me, since I had been putting on a ski race for a while. And I thought, well, this is great. Why don't you just take the USIC?
And it's been running here ever since then, right?
Yeah. Adam, I guess, did you start, you and Zach, was it, yeah, was you, the year 2000 when you guys started it?
Yeah, I think it was 2000 or 2001. You know, I have to look to that USIC trophy that we've got to even remember when it started. But it was one of those 2 years, yeah.
Yeah, and Adam, hey, by the way, hey, it's great to hear your voice. It's been a while. we here in Talkeetna really appreciate your vision, both, you know, on two levels, both from the, you know, not having a prescribed course, and our trailmeister here, Bill Barstow, has done an amazing job enlisting people to help with very different and unusual and unique courses each year. But the two things, you know, having a course, you know, not just go on a prescribed trail loop, as you were saying, but also having community involvement with it as well. And it makes those two things together really make it a dynamic event. I remember a number of years ago, I was at the starting line when we started here in downtown Talkeetna, and I heard these guys speak in this language I wasn't too familiar with. And I said, where are you guys from? They said, well, we're from Finland. You know, we're from Finland. And it was so cool, because particularly some of the folks who come over, you know, from Scandinavia or other places, they can really identify with our race, because, you know, I've never skied in Europe myself, but they seem to express that it's very similar to some of the funky rural races that they have, you know, on the other across the pond.
Right.
Yeah, I think one of the great things that a ski race can do, a cross-country ski race can do, is get people out into country that they wouldn't normally go to. I mean, we all get into our habits. We come home from work and we ski at our regular trail, and it's not so easy to find an excuse to go someplace new and discover something new. But a race like the USIC Classic, I think, is that excuse. And I think that people come to the USIC Classic in Talkeetna partly to see where Bill is going to send them. And it's one of the principles of this race, as Arthur and I have discussed several times in the past, is that the race should try to go someplace new every year, so that when you come to the USIC, you know it'll be an interesting course, but you don't really know where it will go, and you might not even know before you start the race. You'll have some idea, and I think that's something that is really appealing to people, and I think it's one of the things that people have liked about the USIC over the years, and I think people expect that in the future.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the race itself then. Bill, you are the trailmeister.
Yeah.
And so what lengths, because is there 25K and a 50K, is that right?
Yeah, there's about approximate Talkeetna distance, as we call it. But there's usually a 25K course, and then often there's a one loop 50K course. That's
As Eric Dankwalter so succinctly put it last year, he was saying you can either do the full 25K or the half of, no, what did he say?
What was he saying? I'm not going to do the half 50K. I'm going to do the full 25K.
Yeah.
Eric Dinkwell.
Yeah, it's fun. People really appreciate being able to see that much country. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we have to, you know, go with the double lap course. We have done that. And we're not sure where we're going to be this year. Kind of waiting on
right.
the weather. But it's a great race. A lot of exploration going on. It gets people out, like Adam was saying, in a different country. And last year we had about 4 bridges over some little streams. And I went by a big glacial erratic. And
one of the things that's really great about the courses that Bill has laid out too is, and as Adam has mentioned, you know, it, rather than going on like what you referred to as like a prescribed course mm-hmm. where the trails are really groomed really well, so you have solid pole placement, there are elements of going, whenever Bill goes into the backcountry here, of some funky sections or maybe some pretty sustained funky sections where the skiing is not perfectly groomed or anything, and there's some question marks, you know, and maybe it's places where you have to take off your skis. And it's kind of rural and kind of funky, but it kind of gets cross-country skiing back to its roots, you know.
So, Bill, what do you look for when you're laying out the course? To vary it up? Or you said that you went around a glacial erratic last year? Was that just because you thought it'd be cool to...
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's what's nice about the USA, because it's always different. And even aside from the course, we always try to have something that's going to be new, just so people... It's not the same old thing, and people get really excited about that. So try to find something different, but also have to work with river conditions, snow conditions, start-finish areas, and kind of put together some more developed trails with some pretty wild trails.
Okay.
And it's nice to kind of rehabilitate some of these old trails that have been overgrown with brush, and the community can kind of enjoy that the rest of the year.
Right.
Well.
Hey, Adam, could you offer some comparisons to what you see as the terrain and the nature of the sheep when it was up in the Sheep Mountain area compared to Talkeetna?
Yeah, for sure. And actually, I was thinking when you guys were talking about this, but I think that one of the nice things about USIC and the way the trail goes, I was sort of thinking about these races I've read about on the internet, like Spartan races and these obstacle course races that are getting kind of popular, where you're running this race in maybe like a football field, but the organizers have put in all these obstacles that you're supposed to climb over and stuff. But the nice thing about the USIC is that if the trailmeister tries to make the nicest, smoothest trail possible out in the woods and the wilderness, you run into natural obstacles. And so they're not contrived obstacles. But sometimes the trailmeister has to figure out a way to get across this swamp, and it's going to require something a little tricky just to make it. So I think there's something kind of aesthetically pleasing about that the obstacles aren't contrived and man-made. They just happen to be out in the woods,
right,
and you got to deal with them as you're skiing.
And don't get Bill any ideas.
I say Bill's nodding his head as you're talking about this.
But as far as the comparison to the from those other courses, the up at Sheep Mountain and at Majestic Valley, the terrain, it's very difficult to find level terrain. There was some flat terrain the first year, relatively level. But some people said that they thought that course was something like 78 or 72 kilometers. It was a one-loop race that the winner, who is Tron Flagstad, who's a really fast guy and can do 50 kilometers in just over 2 hours, you know, on a smooth course. I think it took him almost 4 hours to do this race, and he won it by 45 minutes or something like that. So that was kind of an extreme one. But most of the courses when we were up there, we really were struggling to find flattish terrain. So everything was very steep. And we had some obstacles, like I remember a year when we had to sort of ski down off the road grade from the Glen Highway, and it was a mogul field of sort of a snow machine trail, basically went steeply down off the road grade. And that was kind of a crazy one. We also had a year when we sort of had to go down a little bit of a canyon. There was no other way to do it, but we had two-way traffic in this canyon, and we warned people, you know, try not to get into a head-on collision with other people. And somehow it worked out. We didn't have any problems, but that might have been more luck than anything else. But Talkeetna is a lot – it's a little more conducive, I think, to ski race trails that are, you know, that everybody can do. There are some obstacles, but it's not like you've got screaming fast downhills that last 15 minutes of just terror, which is sometimes what we ran into up in the Sheep Mountain Majestic Valley area.
Bill's not nodding his head anymore. Our topic today, we're talking about the Denali Nordic Ski Club and the USIT Classic Ski Race. If you'd like to join in on the conversation, give us a call, 733-1200, or send us an email, dj@ktna.org. I think I saw the phone light flashing a minute ago, and we might have missed it. But the caller ID said pretty on it, so I can only imagine who that is. While we're talking about, you know, the trail, the race, things like that, last year I recall that there was, leading up to the race, there was a little bit of apprehension about the weather. Last year was not a great snow year, and it was kind of that last weekend before the race we got dumped on, and, you know, it really helped things out, made the trail crew go out there really early in the morning. But and this year, again, another fairly poor snow year. So what is it, what does that potentially mean? I mean, what does that change in your considerations, Bill, when it comes to putting together the trail?
Well, it's makes for a lot more worry, for one thing.
Sure.
I think as usual, you know, we always have a fallback where we have some trails that are pretty smooth. And, you know, if we basically had no snow, we could always use that. Of course, we want it to be the USIC, and we want it to be interesting and go new places. So I just occupy myself by just getting to work on what it might be. And instead of trying to just cut the race down now because the winter's not going well, I'm just optimistic that it's going to come around, and just like it did last
year. Yeah, the Trailmeister here, hats off to him. He's had to have ice water running through his veins just to, in order to be able to, you know, handle the stress. And one of the things, too, is that one of the advantages of having it at Sheep Mountain earlier on was that, Adam, what's the elevation up at Sheep Mountain?
Oh, it must be maybe 1,000 feet, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and
but,
so...
But that's a lot in Alaska.
Yeah, and so Sheep Mountain, you know, it was pretty stable as a late-season race because of its advantages of the elevation and, the longer, sustained snowpack, whereas we don't have the benefits of that here, and so... And so that, you know, and look at the Iditarod this year and those sort of things. So it you know, things are changing, and we're hoping that, you know, who knows, maybe we'll have to move it back to Sheep Mountain if the glaciers start melting and all that. But, you know, it is a significant consideration.
Right. We do have a caller on the line. It is Willie, so let's see if we can get him patched through. Willie, are you there?
Good morning.
Do you have your radio turned up?
I have my radio off.
Oh, okay. We're getting a little bit of feedback, but I think it's all right. So what's your question, Willie, or comment?
Well, I was just in lieu of what happened last year, and those of you that may not know that are listeners, we had a pretty rough no snow period leading up to the USIC, and Arthur's brother, Chris, happened upon the idea of having a nice bonfire and sacrificing a pair of wooden skis to the weather gods, and lo and behold, we get 20 inches or so of snow right before the USIC. And I was just wondering if Arthur would know if Chris is going to be possibly running short of wooden skis anytime soon, given the winters we've had.
Well, we did, if you recall, at the end of Main Street there down by the river, we had that pre-season ski burning. So we already have... A couple of pairs of wooden skis have been consummated, or consummated. whatever you do when you burn skis. Anyway, but that's happened already. So Uluru, the Norwegian god of snow, we thought that would appease him, but who knows?
Right.
Might have to bust out some more. And the thing is that it's kind of tough to give up your wooden skis, you know. And so they're, I guess we're going to have to go down to Play It Again Sports and see if they have one.
Well, thanks for the call, Willie.
All right.
If you would like to join in the conversation, just like Willie did, you can give us a call, 733-1200, or send an email to dj@ktna.org. So to talk a little bit more about plans, you know, the race is only about half of the weekend, really, Because last year, do you, either of you remember off the top of your head how many skiers we had last year? It was hundreds.
I think it was over 600.
It was.
It was a bad snow year, so it could easily be 750 is our limit, I think. And
okay.
If we had a good snow year, it could be that many people. And part of Adam's vision early on was, you know, it wasn't just the ski race that you were getting. It was a long loop, and
sure.
But you're also there was a band and there was food. And so that's continued. So a lot of people that are coming to ski the race are spending a night or two in town and
right.
going out to restaurants and whatnot.
And then there's always a big party at the end.
Yeah, and one of the things that's really nice about the scheduling slot for the USIC, it's one of the last races of the ski season. So
mm-hmm.
there are a lot of skiers whose competitive season is over, and they just are kind of frolicking in the USIC, just going out
sure.
and busting it out for fun. And they love to come to Talkeetna for that very reason.
Yeah, we had last year had at least one member of the Olympic ski team with us. And Adam, I understand that once upon a time you were a member of the U.S. Olympic ski team.
Yeah, I was in 94 in Lillehammer, Norway. I was on the Olympic team. So it has been a while now.
Hey, so Adam, so have you ever skied in the – I wanted to mention to Phil, you know, the concept of Loppet races and World Loppet races and such. Have you ever skied in the Norwegian Birkebeiner?
I have, yeah. I did it in 1989, and that was a great race. I really enjoyed it. It was the Norwegian Birkebeiner is interesting because it really gains a lot of altitude in the middle of the race. So it's a little like the I don't know, I think there's some ideas that come to the USIC from races like that. You start down at pretty low altitude in Lillehammer, and then you go way up over the mountains above treeline, where the wax usually changes, and that's one of the big constant difficulties with a race like the Birkebeiner that competitors have to deal with. One of those elements of nature that we have to deal with, just like you do at the USIC, where you start with a certain kind of, it's a classic ski race, so you have to kick wax your skis, and you have a certain kind of wax that you're using down low, and then usually if you're putting on clister, you get up in the mountains, and then you've got, it's difficult to
wow.
figure out which
wow.
wax to use, and that
yeah.
makes the race interesting, and I think mm-hmm. that's what differentiates cross-country ski racing from running, for example. Running's fine, and I don't want to say bad things about running, but it's kind of always the same. You run down the road or you run down the trail, and you're going to have pretty good traction. But skiing is one of those things where the nature and the weather really change each event, and they make it something that a good skier has to deal with, and I think that's one of the interesting things about the sport.
Right.
How many participants were in the Norwegian Birkebeiner? Like,
well, I don't know how many they have now. I think at that time there were maybe 8,000.
It's up to 16,000 now, I think, for the Norwegian Birkebeiner.
So quite the race. We've got another caller on the line, Dave. Dave is joining us. So, Dave, are you there?
I am.
And
good morning.
Good morning.
A couple of things you guys could touch on. Well, one is the incredible, I hesitate to mention this because it might jinx it, but years where it just looks absolutely hopeless and grim. The date chosen just turns out to be the perfect window, and it's like magic. And people are in the back of the pack where I am, are going along with amazed at the perfect conditions and taking pictures of the mountains, and it's just a really fun thing. The other thing that ought to be mentioned is the unofficial feed stations where
mm-hmm.
you might find bacon or even whiskey.
Right. I was going to mention that, but thanks for bringing that up, because that is definitely one of the special features, I guess we'll say, of the USIC is those unofficial aid stations. So for those unfamiliar with any kind of endurance or distance sport, you often have aid stations where they, you know, get a little bit of hydration, maybe a little bit of caloric intake for yourself. But along the trail, area residents have kind of taken it upon themselves to set up their own aid stations.
Yeah, the ski club is part of our the responsibilities that we take on is to make sure that we have certain sanctioned aid stations along the way that where people can get their electrolytes replaced or some calories in their bellies to continue on. And also we have emergency rescue sleds and that kind
right.
of thing. And so, yeah, one of the outcroppings of this has been this spontaneous expression of these individualized aid stations, and it's really added a lot to the character of the race. It really has.
Yeah, it's a festive event. It's kind of a celebration of spring, a celebration of the ski season. A lot of people are in costume.
Yes. Yeah, that's another new thing.
Yeah, I remember that from last year when I was doing the coverage of the race. There were definitely some fun costumes involved. And so, you know, one of the things that I've noticed in covering the race over the last couple of years is it really does, even the competitive aspect of it, in air quotes, is very kind of laid back. And I think you were mentioning that when you've got these competitive skiers at the end of their season. And so this really is just an opportunity for the whole ski community to just have a good weekend.
Yeah, I think Adam could touch upon that more, having been a competitive skier.
Sure.
Adam, what's your take on that?
Have you ever been in costume for a race, Adam?
I haven't personally. It doesn't mean that I'm afraid to do that, but I just haven't had the right opportunity. But as far as the competitive, you know, there are skiers at the USIC that are trying really hard to win the race. There have traditionally been cash prizes, and it's a kind of a big race to win, actually. And so the guys at the front and the women at the front are trying really hard to win it. But there is definitely, it's a nice combination, I think, among the top elite racers of everybody is racing as hard as they can. They're trying really hard to win. They've waxed their skis as well as they can, and they're putting everything into it. But they're all smiling while doing it because it's the USIC or in other races like it. I think the Buckwheat Classic is similar down in Skagway, and there are other races that are kind of similar. Maybe the Sonat Kazoot up in Fairbanks. They're trying really hard to win, but it's not like being at the national championships where it's sort of a life and death thing. You really want to win, but if you don't win, you're racing against your buddies and you're trying your best.
And there's still a party at the end.
And I'd say, you know, the one thing that has really changed in this race from when it used to be up at Sheep Mountain and Majestic Valley Lodge and is now at Talkeetna is that now you have a ski club running it. In the old days, it really was me running it. I just kind of put it on by myself, and just like Dave was saying, the weather always just sort of seems to come together just in time for the USIC. For me, it was volunteers. I would show up there by myself the day before the race, and the morning of the race, people would say, "Well, how are you going to handle that feed station?" And I'd say, "Oh, you know, you have time? Could you grab the snow machine and just take it out there and do it?" And I would get volunteers to help out with the race. Literally an hour, hour and a half before the race, people would offer their help and it would work out. But now it's so much more organized and it has really become a different race. And I think it has to be, because in the old days we would have 100 or 200 or 300 people. But when you've got 600 or 700 people and you're running with a ski club, there's a certain expectation that there's some professionalism in it. And back when I was running it, it really was really fly by the seat of my pants. And, and so it's changed a lot. I think now you have the entire, really the community of Talkeetna behind it. And that's been a really nice change from me running it by myself and gathering a few people to sort of help put the thing together to being an organized thing that's got a committee and people are thinking about it months in advance. I often started thinking about this race a couple of weeks ahead and went, "Oh, it's the youth to something and go up there and groom some trails or something." And so it's a very different race now.
Okay.
Hey, Adam, just along those lines, did you, my brother was mentioning to me that this while back that some people were using their times from the USIC as a qualifier race for some of the World Loppet races, I guess, for the Norwegian Birkebeiner and stuff. So it kind of puts a feather in the cap of the USIC because I guess because it's a 50K, no, a Loppet. Is there an official definition for what a Loppet race is? Is that over any particular distance or?
No, I don't know. And if somebody's using the USIC, then I think that definition has got to be pretty loose. And I don't mean, I mean it's just the USIC is the USIC. There's nothing else quite like it, I don't think. But I did see something a few years ago that I thought was crazy. I was on the internet and I think I Googled USIC Classic and I came up with this list of like the top 100 most difficult endurance races in the world. And the USYK was ranked like number 8 or something.
All right.
Like that.
All right.
And it was like the Tour de France was number 10. And there was some race across like the Himalayas or something across the Alps that was number 13 or number 6 or something. I thought the USYK number 8. And this is
must have been a bad snow year.
It must have been a bad snow year or written by somebody that I mean, the USYK, I don't mean to intimidate anybody with that comment. If you haven't done USYK, I can tell you it's not all that hard.
Hey, but Adam, come, we have you on the phone. We have you in our clutches. You and Zach came up with the name. Could you give us the backstory on the name and like what is an USYK? I mean, like fill us in.
Sure. The race, you know, when we got together and talked about this race, we came up with the name the USYK Classic that night. But for about a half an hour before we called it the USYK Classic, it was going to be the T-Bone Classic, like a T-Bone steak. I went up to Deb and I went up to see Zach and Ann Jeanette at their lodge at Sheep Mountain Lodge, and we were having a couple of beers and talking about this race that we were going to put on. We had decided we were going to do it, and we were trying to figure out what a good name would be for the race. And we sort of were talking about these principles, like we've talked a little bit about in this telephone conversation, where we said, well, it's going to be fun, and we're going to have a party afterwards. We're going to have a band, and we're going to do all this stuff. We're going to go through the woods. And so, what should the winner win? What should the winner win? And Zach said, well, I think we should, you know, here at the lodge, we could make them a T-bone steak or something. And so the winner wins a steak dinner. That would be kind of a classic Alaska thing. And so we said, oh, we'll call it the T-bone Classic. And if you win, you win a T-bone steak or something. And we couldn't come up with anything better for a while. So that was what it was going to be. And then suddenly Zach said, you know, I think I've got an USYK that somebody, Zach's an Iditarod musher, and Ann Jeanette is also. And they had some friends in Northwest Alaska that had given them an USYK a few months earlier, and they'd forgotten about it. And they said, oh, we've got this USYK. Let's put the USYK on a trophy, and we'll call it the USYK Classic Race. And so it was obvious that that's what we should call it, because we came up with all sorts of jokes like the USYK, you know, it's long and hard, those sorts of jokes that we thought this is the perfect name for this race. And Zach said, well, I just have to find the USYK. And it took him a couple weeks. And he did find it. It was sitting outside. I think one of his employees had been using it to knock down icicles off the building, and they broke the USYK. So the USYK is only about half, you know, it's broken in half, and we couldn't find the other half. And if you look at the trophy, you see there's a bunch of bite marks all over the USYK, too. You know, Zach and Ann Jeanette are Iditarod mushers, and the USYK was sitting out there in the snowbank, and the dogs had been gnawing on it. So
oh, nice.
The USYK has been through a lot, but that's where the name came from.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just under a minute with the rest of our discussion about the Denali Nordic Ski Club, the USYK Classic, and all sorts of other fun skiing-related topics. We'll be back in about 1 minute. If you want to join us in the second half of the hour, the number to call is 7:33, 1200. Back. My guests in the studio are Arthur Mannix and Bill Barstow, and on the phone we have Adam Verrier, who is the godfather of the USYK Classic Ski Race. We're talking about cross-country skiing, the USYK Classic, the Denali Nordic Ski Club. And if you want to join us, the number to call is 733-1200, or you can send an email to dj@ktna.org. So, you know, we've talked a lot about the USYK Classic Ski Race, the event itself, and It's coming up here in about a month. So if folks are curious about updates, you know, I know you said, Bill, that you'd be keeping an eye on the weather, things like that. If people are interested in kind of keeping up with what's going on there, what do they need to do?
As far as what's going on with the course or if they want to
get any updates or if they want to get involved,
Well, the ski club does have a website and a Facebook page. That's the Denali Nordic Ski Club.
Thanks to Iris Vandenham, who has done a great job setting up this website, and who is also the race director.
Yeah, we also have ski club meetings the first Wednesday of every month.
Okay.
And, open to anybody who wants to come and listen in.
And, you know, if anyone wanted to give me a call, if they want to get involved in trail work, my number is 242-8071.
And
very
Bill,
appreciated.
Yeah, Bill does yeoman's work on the trail each year, and he's been a big part of it is that he's been great too at organizing and inspiring volunteers to get out there and help them out. It's not a one-man job, and Bill Bill definitely could use a hand. And what was that number again, Bill?
It's 242-8071. You have to dial 907 beforehand.
Oh, yeah, Anchorage number? Yeah. Okay, so so what you're saying is you're actively seeking volunteers.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. It's, you know, it's it's easy to envision the course, but implementing it is another thing. And it's fun to get out with friends and just be outside, and, you know, it's great.
Actually, I think Bill is downrating his efforts because I particularly don't think it's all that easy to envision a course. It takes, you know, seeing the whole seeing the forest through the trees type of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'm out there working. I myself am not a good course layer outer. And I'm out there, and I'm wondering where the heck is this thing going to go. And my both my brother in the past and Bill in the for the past number of years has done has had that vision kind of through the the trees to pull off something, because you got to be concerned about in certain areas the gradient and whether or not, because a lot of this terrain is it's all moraines that have overgrown, and I think it takes some finesse and some creativity to come up with something that is doable. And still interesting. And so, you know, thanks a lot, Bill. I think you've been kicking butt in that department over the years.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I guess I should say that the envisioning is kind of the fun, creative part, but then you have to make it work. You
right.
know, like any sort of creative endeavor, there's a lot of work behind it that, that together with the vision comes up with the final product.
In theory, and Adam, maybe you could comment on this, is there a formula for a classic trail, like one up, you know, a third uphill, a third downhill, and a third the flats, or what do the pros look at?
Yeah, I think the one third up, one third flat, one third downhill was the way I think they used to try to design ski trails. But now the International Ski Federation, which regulates these sort of things, says that they have some very detailed prescriptions for courses that they would run World Cups or World Championships or Olympic races on. And they include things that they call A climbs and B climbs that have a certain amount of altitude and a certain gradient. And our courses, the USIC Classic course, would be nothing like those. So I think in the old days, yeah, it would be one third up, one third flat, one third down. It would be considered a nice trail. But when the International Ski Federation started regulating how a trail should be done for World Cup races, there's a term they call homologation, where basically somebody from the International Ski Federation decides whether the ski course meets the standards. And but races like the USIC are completely outside of that. And most of the touring races that I've done in Europe or in other parts of the anywhere in the world, they go with whatever trails are available to them. And the USIC is definitely following that standard. You go with whatever Bill and the Denali Ski Club thinks looks like an interesting and fun course that will that people.
Nope, we may have lost Adam there.
Oh,
no, there he is. We got you. We've got you.
Well, everything I said towards the end of that was not, it was very boring. And
so, you know, we've got about 20 minutes left. We do have a couple other topics I'd like to hit on, but before we leave the USIC, anything else to add, gentlemen?
Well, one of the things that
that just to talk to lay people out there who aren't necessarily skiers, I'd like to use the bully pulpit of the radio waves to kind of proselytize about the merits of the activity of cross-country skiing. And
okay.
Of all physical exercises in which one could participate, skiing is one of the most beneficial for one's body because it provides the most complete overall workout with the least amount of trauma to one's anatomy. Like, for example, cycling uses about 40% of the muscle groups in your body, while running uses up to 60% of one's musculature. But Nordic skiing uses about 80% of your muscle groups, and it does so with patterns of movement that are low impact, and they're for longer lasting in their physical benefits to one's health. You know, only rowing and swimming come close to Nordic skiing in their overall benefits. And in addition to the physical benefits of skiing, there are also the therapeutic and mental and emotional attributes that come with, you know, the breathing of cold, fresh air, the oxygenation of your brain, you know, and the appreciation of our local landscape in a kind of a quiet aesthetic activity. Yeah, I'm a 60-year-old guy with an artificial hip and artificial joints. And were it not for skiing right now, I would be a stiffer, weaker, and less optimistic individual in general. So I guess what you could say is that skiing is I think, one of the best over-the-counter drugs that you could get.
Okay.
Adam has been, you know, a professional skier, and maybe he could add to that.
Well, yeah, I completely agree with you. But I would also say, though, that, you know, if we're looking for final comments, one thing I would like to just say is that as the father of Usyk, I'd say that I had this vision for this race 15 years ago, and the growth of the race in Talkeetna and the changes that it's undergone as it's gone to Talkeetna, and it's become Talkeetna's community ski race, I've been really happy to see the way the race has grown, and I'm not really involved in it anymore. But I'm real proud of the way, of the direction that it's gone and what it's become, because I think it's very exciting each year to, and I've had to miss it the last couple of years due to scheduling conflicts, but I'm hoping to make it this year, and I'm, it really has become Talkeetna's race, and I really like seeing that.
Hmm. Well, we should have some nice hills for you if you make it, Adam.
Okay.
One of the side benefits of the USIC that I guess we haven't discussed, but it's very significant, and I guess it's one of the ancillary benefits of Adam, you know, deciding to, you know, get it out of Sheep Mountain and such. But there is a local resident who came up to me once, and this person grew up in rural Alaska, and he came up to me and he said, "Hey, Arthur, you guys really, really have to keep this race in Talkeetna." I said, "I know, it's really great. I appreciate it. And this person's not a skier." And he goes, no, you really have to keep it here. And I said, "Well, yeah, okay, I get it. I appreciate it." He said, "No, you don't get it." He said, "I grew up in a small village. And he said, when I was growing up, you had to go to Seattle if you wanted to see so many beautiful women in one town at that time." And so, yeah, I kind of, you know, after thinking about it, I had to agree with this individual. And so I think that that is a significant one of the literal beauties of this event.
Plus, the USIC puts the cool back in classic. I mean, since at one point in skiing, you know, there was classic skiing and there was no skate skiing, which is so popular. And often people ask, "Can I skate the course?" And, well, yeah, the day after you can. And someday we might have some sort of skating in it, but I'm hoping not.
Okay. So definitely trying to keep it to the classic roots.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's, you know, Arthur, I think you provided a really good segue for some of the rest of what I want to talk about, which is kind of skiing in general. And, you address that to laymen when it comes to skiing, and I definitely count myself in that category. You know, when you're looking at a season like we've had so far this year, where we haven't had a lot of snow, well, we've actually had some rain more recently. But how do you, if you want to get out there and get started in a year like this, what do you do?
It is pretty difficult, and actually, particularly when you're getting thaw conditions and rainy conditions, is actually pretty hard on the trails for people to get out. We try to encourage people not to get out if they're going to be doing more damage to the trail than good. And so it is, that's a tough one, you know, but, you know, but aside from that, if you're a novice skier and, you know, the conditions, you know, normalize, which most of this winter has been actually pretty good skiing. We have had this thaw and such. And actually, we are offering, the Ski Club is offering a number of clinics. If you go onto the Ski Club's website there, my wife, Karen Mannix, is offering. She's been a ski coach at the high school for 12 years. She's offering one in an upcoming weekend here. And then we're having UAF coach Scott Jerome is coming and offering some workshops. And I would, you know, and Adam, maybe you could comment on this, but I think that if to start out, like, we have some classic tracks set, and to hop in some classic tracks, and you kind of first start by kind of shuffling it along because you get that sense of stability, and you just use your natural movements, just your kind of natural walking into sliding movements with the guidance of a classical track. And particularly the X and Y Lake trails are great because they're not really steep and they offer really nice scenery and you can see other skiers out there. And also talking to some of us local skiers, cause I'd love to spend some time. I'll go out there with you. And so, but Adam, what would you say for, like, let's say novice skiers in terms of getting into the sport?
Yeah. What we call classic skiing is, I think it's a very difficult technique to do really, really well. There's a very easy technique to just do the rudiments of the basic skiing, and as you said, that's putting on some skis and going out and just walking. If you learn to shuffle on your skis, you're skiing and you're covering ground and you're able to be outside and get fresh air, and that's what that's the basic of what skiing is all about. So I think that a lot of people want to get into skating, but skating as a beginner is a little bit difficult because it absolutely requires complete weight shift and balance from one ski to the other to the other, whereas rudimentary basic classic technique doesn't involve balancing on one foot and then balancing on the other. So it's very easy and very unintimidating to go out with a pair of no-wax skis, for example, and just go out and ski on the trails, and you've started and you can take it from there.
Yeah, and one of the things actually that's kind of a fun way to do it is Ross Benicek. He's the director of the Junior Nordic program and with the elementary school kids, and they meet on Wednesdays. If you listen on the radio every Tuesday or so, there's an announcement of where the Junior Nordic kids are going to meet. And as an adult, there's nothing more fun, whether you're a beginner or an advanced skier, to go with a bunch of kids, because from 5 years old into, you know, to 10 years old, these kids, it's so inspiring to watch them because they are uninhibited. They have this natural body movements. They're a blast to be with. And actually adults can learn a lot by watching kids ski.
Yeah, I think that's right. And the vibe, those sort of things, is, as you've said, they're uninhibited. And I think it kind of creates an environment at those types of gatherings where even as an adult, the kids are all running around and falling down and getting back up and falling down again and getting back up and falling down again. And as an adult, you go around a bunch of kids. It's just play. And you go out skiing and you don't worry too much about it. And before you know it, you're a lot better skier than you were an hour ago.
Yeah.
All right. And I guess one thing we didn't mention, in years past, y'all have had a race for some of the junior skiers. Is that going to happen again this year?
I believe so. Yep, that's been fun. It's a short 3-kilometer race for kids. And
the junior
USIC. Ribbons. Yeah. Yep, the junior USIC. And I think that's in the plan.
Okay, cool. So definitely a lot of opportunities for some of the younger skiers in town as well as some of the adult folks.
Yeah.
So while we're kind of, like I said, on the topic of skiing in general, and Arthur, you mentioned some of the other things that the ski club is going to be doing, clinics and that sort of thing. One event that I recall happened, I don't know if I remember it happening this winter, but at least in the last couple of years, there was a wooden ski, wood and wool.
Oh, yeah. Wool. Roger and Pam Robinson put that on each year, and it's great. And they did have it this year, And they ski from, you know, a local restaurant to another place. I think this year they ended up at either starter or finished at the Flying Squirrel or the Roadhouse. And it's truly a classic if you're busting out the woolies and the wooden skis and getting back to some of the roots of skiing. And then also a few weeks ago, Chris Perry put on the poker ski, which was really fun. It was a few weeks ago when it was really, really gusty. And fortunately, it started in Talkeetna and ended at the Flying Squirrel. A number of us did it. and it was really, really blowy. And so we ended up, starting at the roadhouse, and you pull a card, and then you go to the fair, and you pull a card, latitude, and you go to these different restaurants or so, and pull a card, and then we skied down, across the swamp and up the Rubberneck Point, up the Cat Trail and Rubberneck, and skied down the length of the Talkeetna Lakes with the north wind at our backs, and we could literally just stand up, and the wind shushed us down without even polling. And then one of the stops was Don Lee's hangar there in Christensen Lake. And so everybody, we had, there was schnapps and hot chocolate at all these different stations. It was a very schnapsy event. And but then at the end, at the end of the Flying Squirrel, we played our hands,
Okay.
And so that's a really fun take on skiing.
So you go to, from, just so I make sure I understand, you go from stop to stop, and you get a card.
You get a card.
So you end up with a poker hand.
At the end, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's a fun one.
Cool. Well, we've got about 10 minutes left, so we do still have time. If anybody else wants to call in, the number is 733-1200, or you can send an email to dj@ktna.org. So as we kind of wind down, we've talked about a lot of the different events that happen around here outside of the USIC Classic. It seems like every couple of weeks there's some sort of, like you said, the Wooden Woolies, the poker ski. It seems like there's always kind of something going on, both within and outside of the Denali Nordic Ski Club. What are kind of the plans for the future as far as more, are there going to be more events or grow the USIC race or... Bill?
Well, we did have a new event that this year already that Paul Biebrig headed up. I guess they do it in Fairbanks, and it's really big. It's called the Skier Age, which is in kilometers, thankfully.
Okay.
But,
in kilometers, right.
And, of course, it's a challenge. So but we had some people volunteer, and we had some water and brats and, an aid station. And you can start at midnight if you want. Paul started at midnight, I think, and so you have 24 hours to ski your age.
Okay.
And it's interesting, though, when you get people that are much older than you, and it doesn't seem fair, if you're 65 and you got to ski 65 kilometers and there's a 30-year-old that only has to ski 30, but it's inspiring and it's fun just to get out there and ski with other skiers.
And I was impressed. Paul, I guess, tallied up how many kilometers were skied by the group, and it was something like, the equivalent would be like skiing from here to Whitehorse or something. There was a lot of kilometers skied. And so it is kind of a cruel one because you have the older skiers who are essentially kind of behind the herd,
right,
as it were, having to bust out the most kilometers.
You've got the peak probably, between like 25 and
right.
40. And then,
Right.
Okay.
As far as the future, we like the USIC the way it is. We're trying to maintain what makes the USIC the USIC. But we don't really want to turn people away either.
Right.
I think we might have reached the size that's going to stay.
Well, the town just about reaches capacity when it happens.
I don't believe there's any vacancies.
Yeah. Well, and I guess that's another interesting thing to bring up that we didn't talk about during the race itself is, it's kind of a big shot in the arm for the economy of Talkeetna for that weekend.
Especially, in March.
Yeah.
Late winter, and people's... bank accounts are down if they're summer workers,
yep.
And it's substantial.
And I think one of the big benefits, too, is that it's the type of activity that I think a lot of the folks in Talkeetna want to encourage happening in Talkeetna. Tourism is great, but, I think, a lot of tourists come and, in buses and come and just walk Main Street and then get on the, train and head out, and that's great for the economy and such, but I think that, the percentage of people who come up to ski the USIC are really actively participating in kind of a traditional healthful activity, as well as giving the community a financial inject in the arm.
Sure. Know? Sure. Do you think we'll see any hot tubs on flatbeds this year?
I think that should be encouraged. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Hot tubbing or saunas are, traditional go-together activities with Nordic skiing.
All right. Well, we're down to about the last 5 or 6 minutes here, so I'll give each of you an opportunity to kind of give any final thoughts on the USIC Classic or the ski club or skiing in general. And Adam, we'll start with you.
Well, yeah, I made my comments about the USIC
and
how I think it's so excellent that it's found its permanent home. belongs. But I would say something Arthur had a little bit about the benefits of cross-country skiing. And one thing I would say, being here in Alaska or in Talkeetna, I know some people, and we all know some people who just try and survive winter, and they like summer sports, and they get out and do stuff. But during the winter, they just try to get through it so that they can get back to beautiful summers that we have here in Alaska. And I think that taking up a sport like cross-country skiing, if you're not already involved in it, is essential to your mental health in a place like South Central Alaska, where it can be dark and cold a lot in the middle of the winter. If I were to move to Hawaii, I would definitely take up sea kayaking and surfing or something that would get me out on the ocean, because that's their natural playground. And I think our natural playground here is out in the woods and the mountains. And, you know, you don't have to get way out in the mountains and be in avalanche country to enjoy being out in the woods and enjoying cross-country skiing. And in Anchorage, we've got loads of trails right in town that are lighted, and it's so easy to go out after work for 45 minutes, get a little exercise, and you feel a lot better. And in Talkeetna, the trail systems are always developing. It's getting bigger and bigger there. And if you live in Talkeetna or anywhere in South Central Alaska, or in the Matsu, you know, in Wasilla or Palmer, there's plenty of trails to get out on. And I would encourage anybody if you're not cross country skiing already, it's a great way to just enjoy winter. And like I said, I've seen just way to live, in my opinion.
All right. Well, thanks, Arthur. Any final thoughts?
Well. Philip, on behalf of the board of directors of the Denali Nordic Ski Club, we'd personally like to thank you and the other folks here at KTNA for the great job you've been doing over the years in maintaining our community's sense of cohesiveness, you know, by simply keeping folks informed. I'd like to take a little poetic license here, because in the skiing world, there's this stuff called binder wax, and binder wax is a tacky adhesive wax that grips right onto the base of the ski. And what it does, it provides a surface upon which one can apply the appropriate kick wax for the snow conditions of the day. And that kick wax can be different for different people. You can choose whatever kick wax you want for any particular day, but it's really nice to have a solid binder wax underneath to improve the performance of your wax of choice. Well, you know, to me, this station is kind of like a good binder wax. It's good stuff because it improves the overall performance of our community by enabling us to think together, to work together, and to function a bit more harmoniously than we would otherwise, you know, without such a good basic communication. So hats off to you guys.
Well, thanks. Bill, any final thoughts?
Here's to a good Usyk this year. Hopefully the snow gods will be kind to us, and it's time to start training.
All right. And one thing we have neglected to mention is what an Usyk actually is. And I think Arthur has a little bit of a poem to help us out here we've got about 2 minutes left. So he's going to read the first part of this poem for us.
Okay. Thanks, Philip. Well, for those who are unfamiliar with the definition of Usyk, it's an appendage, like a part of the anatomy of a male walrus. And so anyway, there's this poem written by, Gary Heiss, of which I guess for the radio waves, I can only really read the first half of this poem. And you can use your imaginations to fill out the second half, or you can go on to the Denali Nordic Ski Club website to read it in its entirety. But this is the Ode to an Usyk. Strange things have been done in the midnight sun, and the storybooks are full, but the strangest tale concerns the male, magnificent walrus bull. I know it's rude, quite common and crude, perhaps it's grossly unkind, but with first glance at least, this bee-whiskered beast is as ugly in front as behind. Look once again, take a second look, then you'll see he's not ugly or vile. There's a hint of a grin in that blubbery chin, and the eyes have a sly secret smile. How can this be, this clandestine glee that exudes from a walrus like music? He knows there inside, beneath blubber and hide, lies a splendid contrivance, the USIC.
And you can check out the rest of that poem at the Denali Nordic Ski Club website. I'd like to thank my guests, Arthur Mannix, Bill Barstow, and Adam Ferrier. If you missed part of the show or want to listen again, we'll re-air Sioux Valley Voice at 7 o'clock tonight, or you can listen online anytime at ktna.org. Join us next time on Sioux Valley Voice on March 4th, when my guests will be members of the Old Iditarod Gang, and our topic will be the new book, Iditarod, The First 10 Years. I'm Philip Manning. Thanks for listening.